You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where, of course, we talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News and the Fieldhouse. Today is game three of the 2000 NBA Finals recap day. We've been chugging through these. And here to talk about that later, we're going to do a different first segment first. My lovely co-host, Adam Friedman. Adam, how you doing, man?
Doing okay. You also know Tony called me on our little Zoom chat where we record this, and immediately proceeded to cough in the mic for about 5 seconds. So
my first coughs of the day were right after I let Adam in. You know, yeah, I usually just ask how you're doing as like a filler.
But I think it's like a serious concern.
Not actually. Yeah, it matters. I care about the answer. So we're not going to jump right into the finals today because we actually have like stuff to talk about, kind of news-wise about the team. Yeah. We'll end for about 20 minutes talking about the game. The first Pacers win. It's very fun and exciting. Reggie looked awesome. But first, we have three things to talk about, two relating to the Pacers specifically, one NBA thing that could affect them. Let's start with Sabonis, Adam. I don't know if you watched any of this.
No, Tony, I did not. I'm sorry. I mean, I'm certainly somewhat bored at home, don't get me wrong. Although I actually have found ways to entertain myself. But no, I did not watch Sabonis play 2K. I did not enjoy watching grown men play esports.
Yeah. Watching people play esports is fun if the people playing are good. And Sabonis sucks at 2K. So Sabonis played.
He's too busy practicing to play basketball because he's like, you know, one of the best 50 players in the league this year, maybe one of the best 30 this year, you know. So he's too busy working out, going to the gym, you know, things that like are important.
He actually did talk about during the game, him and Montrezl. So, okay, the overview here, he played a 2K game against Montrezl Harrell for an NBA sponsored 2K tournament. It was on ESPN2. He got his ass handed to him. He sucks at 2K. He said he got the game this week or something. He did talk to Montrez about like working out during the game. He's like, you in LA and stuff. And Sabonis, by the way, clearly not in Indiana. You can tell by the background.
Of course. I mean, if he has a gym out in LA or something.
Yeah, I think he goes to LA in the summer, so I'm pretty sure he's in LA. Anyway.
Every NBA player goes to LA in the summers or Miami.
He asked if Trez found a gym, and Trez was like, no, we're doing like team Skype workouts. And Sabonis said same. And then they both said they were having trouble finding a gym. So I think Sabonis, A, said that the Pacers are doing these online workouts every day. And B, has not found a basketball to play basketball in this interim period, which is very interesting. But he sucks at 2K. There's not a lot of the game to talk about.
Would you rather watch guys play 2K or watch guys play horse?
Oh, horse will be super cool if they do that.
Will it? I don't know. Will it?
I think it will not be fun, but it'll be more fun than 2K. My God, Sabonis is terrible. Sabonis' first possession passes to himself, like his character in the game, and misses an elbow jump, and he goes, oh, I suck, like talking about him in real life. It was funny.
I only know like the tweet length of the horse thing. How would that work? It'd be like, and who's going to play in it?
I don't know. I don't know how it would work. They'd have to find guys who have access to like a home gym.
So like LeBron does.
Yeah, and then they like film them separately or something.
Giannis probably does, right?
No, Giannis said he doesn't. Instagram Live. I don't know how it's gonna work.
It's gonna be a lot of rusty players this comes
out. Hopefully the Pacers have a player in it so we can have a reason to watch it.
LeBron's gonna come out pretty strong because he definitely has his own home gym. Yeah. He has his whole everything at home.
So that's news thing number one. Sabonis lost by 21. Didn't really admit anything about his workouts or the Pacers besides that little tidbit earlier. Brian Bowen played in that 2K game against Frank Kaminsky earlier. Bowen would kick Sabonis' ass in the game. Okay, news bit number two.
Bowen is not a good basketball player, doesn't matter.
News bit number two, actually important. The Bulls, well, this could have been important. The Bulls are restructuring their front office, finally. They've had like two president of basketball operations since like the 80s or something crazy. And they were looking to interview at least four candidates, the four known ones. One of them was Pacers GM Chad Buchanan, which is very interesting. Buchanan spent a long time in Portland before going to Charlotte, before coming to Indiana. And the Bulls wanted to give him full control of the team. But right after I wrote a freaking article about it, he turned down the interview and he is staying in Indiana, which is pretty cool.
Right. So the Bulls have had, I'm looking it up now because I'm right. They've had John Paxton.
And Gar Foreman right now. That's their
Gar Foreman player. And then Jerry Krause, who was the one who like didn't want to keep Jordan, right? That was you ever read what's the book? It's by Sam Smith, maybe. He's a the like 1993 Jordan or something like that, where like basically who did they draft? They drafted some European guy like Tony
Kukoc.
Kukoc, I thought was going to be better than Jordan. It was like this hilarious just thing of Jerry Krause thinking he was like so much smarter than Michael Jordan and he didn't need him as to be successful and stuff. None. It was.
Yeah, the so they're finally doing the right thing because clearly what the Bulls have been doing for basically outside of Derrick Rose has been terrible since Jordan left. They're finally restructuring their front office. Buchanan, clearly super impressionable, right? Like, so the two GMs he worked under in Portland were Pritchard and then Rich Joe. And then Rich Joe hired him to work under him in Charlotte. And then Pritchard hired him to work under Pritchard in Indiana, right? So two guys he worked under said, we want you to work for us. Like, that's a big deal. Good at scouting. That's his background. Obviously cares about culture. That's his big thing every time he talks on draft night. Basically everything the Bulls need, but they're not getting him because he's staying in Indiana.
So can I ask somebody, how many GMs in the Pacers, president of basketball, president of the Pacers have had since 86?
86, man, a lot.
No.
Five?
Well, five total times three names. Walsh, Bird, Pritchard.
Hey.
And then Buchanan, obviously, they've had a few GMs, right? But I mean, like, in terms of top guys, they've had basically the same as the Bulls since 86.
Well, like, GMs do other stuff that isn't basketball all the time, like some hotel stuff and GMs, logistics.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming, don't they just have a couple other assistant GMs, too, that kind of run the show?
And also Peter Dinwiddie is the senior vice president of basketball operations or something. Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, remember, with basketball operations, it's not just about, like, the players, is also about running a game, like you know, how do you have concessions, how do you run tickets, security for all like this, like the basic stadium operations, like that's a whole part of the basketball operations that's not really like in that title. But I mean, I think it's fair to say that Buchanan's had sort of a pretty strong influence on the like actual basketball side of things.
Yeah, Thad Young talked about, so Casey Johnson, NBC Sports Chicago, was all over the Bulls being into Buchanan in like February. He talked to Thad Young about Buchanan, and Thad was like, this dude's the nicest guy, always cares about his players and how they're feeling, and always wants to try to do better. So, yeah, people have nice things to say about him.
Well, he's the what's the right way to put this? He's the – what's from Moneyball? He's the – I forget what the guy's name is, whatever, Peter to Billy Bean, basically.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Where Billy Bean was the asshole that nobody – that never talked to the players, but then his assistant GM was the guy who was always nice to players, always – because he never had to fire them or never had to, like, you know, tell them.
Right.
You know, it was always up top and whatnot.
So news number three is kind of NBA and also not news. It's just kind of the evolving reality of how the games could be played in the future. And I know there were some reports about how they're monitoring China, who had to push back their start a month, and some reports saying they're looking for – a neutral site where they can house every team to play the games. I think Vegas was actually the only spot that was specific.
Makes sense. They have all the hotel infrastructures there, like the large, just unlimited amount of hotel infrastructure. They have multiple stadiums there. They have two basketball facilities.
Yeah, they have two courts in that one arena where they have Summer League.
The Summer League. They have two different courts you could play on. They've got
And in Summer League, they crank out like 10 games a day.
Yeah, like, I mean, it makes sense.
So they could do something like that.
Plus,
so,
I wonder if they could – is the UNLV gym different from all this stuff too or no?
I don't think so, actually. I don't know. Maybe they practice there or something like that. I should know that, but I don't.
But whatever it is, they have – well, where does the hockey team play?
Again, also don't know or really care.
No, because they – you can put
a basketball – no problem with hockey, just don't care about the NHL.
No, but you can put a basketball stadium in the hockey.
Right, yes.
Stuff like that.
So they also had the call with all the commissioners in the White House had the call this week with Trump saying that, you know, because the NBA is the first thing to shut down, he wants them to be the leader in coming back. I'm not sure how much credence they'll give to that in terms of rushing back versus valuing public health. But I do wonder if they're going to be looking at alternatives like the Vegas thing as a way to get the sport back, because that could help them get their money, you know, appease that conversation, things like that. Who knows?
Yeah, so I mean, the thing about this, as we've talked about before, is that the only way this works is with like a really fast test where you're testing everybody every single day.
Every day.
But the other part of this, which Trump is probably actually a little bit right on, is that like the way people will know things are safe is when you start seeing sporting events or things are getting back to normal is when you start. So, like, the first tip I think is probably just to see no fan sports.
Right.
And as you start seeing fans a lot into games, it kind of set up people, okay, maybe things are getting okay to go back out kind of thing. I mean, sports have a way, especially, I mean, that kind of is the way it led to all the shutdowns, right? The NBA.
That's what he said. He said, you guys shut down first and got it to this, that didn't get it to this point, but like that started the snowball.
Yeah, they were the first one to cancel games. Then came the NCAA, and right. It kind of was a snowballing effect. And they sort of are like, I mean, I don't know about you, but like, I mean, I always had like heard about this thing and thought it was this big deal. But it wasn't really until the NBA is like, we're not playing games. I'm like, oh, this is really serious. That was like the moment I had of like epiphany, right. Like, oh crap. So they do prove it's a good signal in this country to stuff. So I think getting just some games without fans. Just started to be really good enough. I mean, you have to figure out how you limit who can come. Is it just players, no family, all this other stuff that can make it harder. But honestly, I think just getting some games started would be good for entertainment, good for just some morale. I mean, there is something about that. I mean, there is some of the public health, and if people are dying, you don't want to be like look like you're just like the NFL draft type thing. We're like hosting an NFL draft in the middle of like what could be the worst 2 weeks in American history.
God, I can't believe they're doing that.
That's maybe not appropriate. But like if we're on the other side of this thing and we're just trying to figure out how not to like prevent it from coming back again, that's why we're social distancing at that point. And we're just sort of like in this weird phase where like we're only bringing little things back at a time and whatnot. Yeah, bringing back sports without fans would be a thing that would make sense at that point.
Yep. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. But I admittedly am not a public health expert. So maybe we'll see the Pacers playing in Vegas for no fans for literally every game they play the rest of the year.
And I think we can is that Adam Silver – kind of his past history will make a decision that he feels is like best for the league, best for people. And honestly, he feels like it's best for the moment. Like he's not going to, he's in his past, he's been so good about kind of like seizing opportunities and also like not playing into their like most worst aspects. The way Goodell and those NFL owners, like they don't, it's money, money, money. Nothing else matters. With Silver, there's some appearance that matters to him more than just like the bottom line dollars all the time.
He is better at zooming out.
Yeah, he sees the bigger picture. I mean, it's why the NBA, even though it probably actually has a worse, like, terms of, like, game-to-game product, is more popular because there's some, like, intrinsic value of, like, you just kind of
respect. And it's global, unlike a lot of other sports.
Yeah, well, there's, like, a respect for the athletes that you don't get in a lot of, like, especially the NFL, right? Like, you can tell the NBA respects its players in a way the NFL, like, clearly – clearly just doesn't give a shit about its players.
Right.
And, you know, it's you know, and it's just – like in the NBA too, right? Like the players matter more than the owners, really. Where in the other, like, you know, I can probably name more. I mean, I probably can't name all 30 NBA owners, although I could probably get close. But like the NFL, I probably could pretty easily because they're all like legendary family names. You know, it's all kind of that like old class versus new class type of thing.
Right. Well, speaking of the players and basketball, something fun about our Monday show is we have been talking about real games. And we're going to do that again after this break. We're going to start looking at the first ever win in the NBA Finals for the Pacers. Let's take a break and do it. Hey guys, let's take a short little break here to talk to you about the great people over at Blinkist. Let me tell you about one of the most useful life hacks there is. It's hard to find the time to sit down and read and learn anymore, although nowadays it's a little easier. When you don't have the free time, you can't read or work on personal development, but there is an incredible app that helps you solve this problem, and I recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is super unique. It works on your phone, tablet, or web browser. It takes the best need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and condenses them into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. So you can use Blinkist to do just about anything. 12 million people are doing it right now, and it has a massive growing library from self-help, business, health, and history books. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists, so you can try it out yourself going to Blinkist.com/MBA to try it for free for 7 days, and you'll save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled BLINKIST.com/MBA to start your 7-day free trial.
Game three, Adam, they finally did it. They broke through and took down the Lakers, although Kobe did not play in this game.
Well, that's why they won, right?
It's not the only reason, although I will say a bit, you know, we talked about this last week. A big part of game two and what went wrong is even when Kobe went out, Bryce and Shaw and Harper were still hitting everything, especially threes. This time, not at all, right? Rice was 3 for 9, Harper was 6 for 14, Shaw was 3 for 10. And that's kind of what we talked about. And I didn't think we would bring it back up so fast, was what I said was, you know, this is the the home game role player, right? This happens in the playoffs sometimes. Bojan, for example. That didn't happen. They come on the road. All of a sudden, they're not these awesome role players who can help you in a game, and they couldn't help. And the Pacers, they jumped out on them pretty early, and they just rode it. Like, all it took was a good first quarter because those guys just couldn't get in a zone.
It was also the game where Reggie was like, oh, I'm as good as Shaq tonight.
Yeah, it was. Well, man, we're kind of burying every conversation I wanted to have early.
And I'm sorry. All right, let's do the role player thing. I'm sorry.
So no. I didn't want to start with the role players. That's where we are.
But you're right. So the Pacers bench had what, like 30-something points, and the Lakers bench had like 12. I mean, that was like
Austin Crozier every game leaves more of an impression on me where I'm like, man, this dude was legit, like, important on a final. Like, I can't explain why I never thought of him this way. Like, people have told me, like, yeah, Austin Crozier was good. Yeah. But now I'm like, holy cannoli, Austin Crozier is, like, real important for these guys.
Yeah, I mean, he was probably their third best player in the series, maybe fourth.
So far, he's been their third. I mean, Smith has been terrible. Well, okay, Shaq's amazing. Like, no offense to Rick Smith.
Terrible on offense, too.
But, yeah, Smith can't hit anything. He's fouling like crazy. He didn't play from, like, mid-third quarter till the end of the game, I don't think.
Even in the old NBA where we're not spacing ball, blah, blah, there's no thing. You at least think you'd want to post Smith up on Shaq to draw fouls to keep Shaq maybe off the court at times, right? Like, and they do that in game four, and we'll talk about it later next week. But like, you would think the key with Shaq is you can't beat him when he's on the floor, so just try to get him off the floor. I mean, he's a big dude; just try to get him to foul you. I mean,
he was out of the game for 4 seconds.
That's like, I mean, yeah, but that's like the game plan. That used to be the Roy Hibbert game plan in the past, was just these big guys who are, when they're on the court, are really good. They can just, like, completely change the game to their defense or their offense, whatever it is. Try to get them off the court as much as possible. Then maybe
it
wouldn't have gotten the foul calls because whatever. But, I mean, it seemed like you would have liked to have Smith posting up and just trying to get Shaq to get fouled. But Steph Smith is continually taking these, like, 16, 18-foot jumpers that are just, like, he's not good at making in the series at least.
Yeah, well, some of why Crozier played as much as he did was Dale Davis had 6 fouls. He ended up fouling out late in this one. Rick Smith had 4 fouls, right? They needed post help. And Crozier's not even really like post, you know what I mean? But they just needed a body because they couldn't do anything. They had to have McKee come in so Crozier could move up a position just so they could have a body out there because they're fouling Shaq like crazy and they cannot get Shaq to foul on the other hand. So yeah, you'd think Smith would be better at that. But again, his bread and butter, like I know they call him the Dunking Dutchman, but his bread and butter is like shooting. Like it's almost Miles-esque in retrospect. Not like, it's different, but the way he is not a post player, but is the center who's giant at the same time.
Which seems hilarious because back then, like, that's all you wanted was a post guy. Like, nowadays.
I think he wasn't good. He was good in the post.
No, but like Turner's lack of post game kind of makes sense because kind of like, well, you came in the NBA in 2015 or 2014 when we came in, and you want a guy who can, like, you're tantalized by the 3-point shot,
right?
Jump shooting, big guy, kind of Dirk-esque, right? Dirk kind of flipped this, but like in 1999-2000, it was like, could you get a guy who just back you the hell down and go 62% from the field, kind of like Shaq did? I mean, that's what you wanted. You didn't want a jump shooting big because it actually didn't have enough value.
Where can we get our Tim Duncan, the big fundamental?
Yeah, well, Smith's, it just made it that he did not post up more, I guess. I mean, he was 7'3", right? I mean.
So we are talking about that center matchup. Let's get to Shaq here. No surprise, first game they hold him under 40. They win the game. The fouling was way down on him. I think they did a little bit better of a job this time of just not letting him get the ball at all, because without Kobe, and they knew that the whole game they could focus in on a no Kobe game plan. I think they were better at, okay, you know, AC Green can have some space, or Brian Shaw can have some space. We're going to make sure we have guys ready to not even let Shaq get the ball as much. 24 field goal attempts doesn't sound like much, but I mean, he had tremendously more every other game of the series. So,
especially in a game where it's only 76 shots taken, right? Nowadays, we're talking 90, 95 shots taken.
Right.
This reminds me a little bit of LeBron in 2015-16, right? This game, especially when remember that game 2 or 3 where LeBron didn't have Kyrie, because Kyrie got hurt in game 1. Kind of reminds me of that, right? Where, like, clearly is the best, most dominant player, is taking an disproportionate amount of shots, but, like,
they have to.
It almost doesn't matter because if you don't have, like, anybody else who can put up a bucket, it's not going to matter.
You mean the first year the Warriors won the title?
Yeah, I guess maybe talking more like game 4 and 5, because really they won game 2 and 3, right, without Kyrie, didn't they?
Yeah, they were up.
Because Dellavedova had those huge games, but then But like, if you don't have role players who can step up, because like, see it later on, like it was very clear that like Kobe was like the difference in this series. I mean, Shaq was the best player, but without Kobe, they probably lose this series.
Yeah, we'll get to the overtime next Monday.
I mean, so it's very much reminiscent of, I think, of the 2015-16 LeBron series.
I think the 2015-16 series was reminiscent of this series.
Maybe. Yeah.
No, come on. It's how time works.
Yes, you're right.
But, it was easier for them to do what they did to Shaq because of Kobe's absence. Not that that's the only reason they won. But, like, last game he had 18 shots and 39 free throw attempts. This time 24 shots, sure, but 26 less free throw attempts. That's 13 that's fewer possessions where he has the ball, basically. Yeah, and he played the entire game.
Forced the ball out of his hands, and there was nobody else that could score him. That's the whole name of the game. That's, like I said, there are two ways to beat Shaq. Either he doesn't have the ball, or he's not on the court.
I like that. Rice shot. I like your percent of total shots. Like, Harper, Shaw, and Rice took 33 of 76 shots. So they were approaching half with just those three guys, and Shaq has to do everything. If they're denying Shaq the ball, you're just relying on role players, and they couldn't do it.
Yeah, let me pull up the 2015-16 season if I can real fast.
I think it's the 2014 finals. Yeah.
2014
so by a year.
Yeah, 2014.
I do remember that game. That was game four in Cleveland, right?
Yeah. Because that was kind of the turning point game. Because so in that game, the Cavs actually only took I missed it. Okay. They took 88 shots in that game. LeBron only took 22 of them, actually.
Oh, maybe you're on the wrong game.
Maybe I'm thinking game five then of that series. Who knows? There was one series where he took like 40 shots, right? Now we're at it. Game five, he took 34 of the team's 81 shots. So
yeah, there you go.
Percentage-wise, it probably gets around close enough to it. I mean, that was like – that's 37% of his team shots, a little higher.
And Kyrie and Caleb were both out, right?
Yeah, that game, this starting five was James, Dellavedova, Thompson, Shumpert, and Mozgov with J.R., James Jones, and Mike Malone off the bench.
Thompson and Mozgov.
Holy crap, that is a garbage team right there.
Yeah. That makes a lot more sense.
Right? And in this game, this is why Steph should have been MVP. This is where Steph had 37 points on 13 of 23 shooting, 17-3. Had Clay with 12, Draymond 16, Iggy with 14. Oh, man.
I do feel bad that we get sidetracked a lot, but I actually like drawing modern comparisons from
the NBA. But like that's the – I mean, this is the comparison, I think, for this team particularly is that. Because what you have is you – on the other end, you have a team who you could call Miller and Rose the – old version of the Thompson and Curry, right? The best 3-point shooter in the league at the time in Miller with a pretty good sidekick who's a pretty damn good shooter as well.
Yep.
And then you had Crozier, and that's kind of their like
Sean Livingston.
Yeah, so there's Sean Livingston. Maybe even you call it like their offensive version of Iguodala or Harrison Barnes kind of player. I don't know. I mean, it's different because the shot obviously is totally different. Like 1-3 in this game. Three. I mean, if it was 2015, he would have taken five threes probably. Right.
So before the game, I love doing these. Before the game, they're talking about what Larry Bird was talking about. And speaking of the Cavs, Larry Bird's way of firing up the Pacers for game three is that he came back from down 3-1 in the 1981 Eastern Conference Finals against the 76ers. I looked up that series. The Celtics won the final three games of that series by a combined 5 points to come back from down 3-1. That had to be the most exciting series ever.
That's pretty good.
They won 111-109 in game five, 198 in game six, and 91-90 in game seven.
Do they win the title that year?
That is a great question. I should know that.
I'm looking this up right now. I have their 80. You're talking about the 80-81 season?
They did, in fact, win the title that year against the Houston Rockets.
That's right. That's when Magic lost to the Rockets, and Larry was pissed because he wanted to beat Magic.
He wanted to beat Magic, yeah. Irving, obviously the stud for the Sixers that year. So that was the anecdote he drew. He said, coming back from 3-0 is impossible. Coming back from 3-1, I've done it before. This game super matters. You got to seize the opportunity, and they did. And a guy you brought up earlier, best shooter in the league at the time, we finally got to see him in peak form in this game without Kobe, who is, again, something we talked about from game two, is – oh, yeah, like he was actually a damn good defender when he was young and spry, was not playing. Reggie could get going to his left. The Pacers figured out what issues they had with him, especially in game one, but also a bit in game two, and he was money.
Yes, he was. This was the game where finally Reggie Miller showed up after, 14 years of no NBA finals, and he had one moment, and this is when he finally showed up for the big moment.
So we all, obviously we all know Reggie was an amazing three-point shooter, would have been literally ridiculous in the modern NBA. But a shot that he was also cash at I can't believe I'm about to compare this. Like, Jeremy Lamb going to the left elbow, like, automatic, right? That's his shot. He's got issues other places scoring. He's automatic at that. Reggie Miller pulling up from the mid-range, especially in this game, it's 3 points. Like, it's just 3 points.
Yeah, I think it's more like Vic-esque.
Yeah, fair enough.
Vic handoff-esque, where Vic would just, like, or maybe even went up here to, like, a David West type of free throw jumper. That was, like, always money. That's what it felt like. He just – he gets to a certain, like, he gets within so many feet of the hoop, and it's just, like, it's going to go in if he's not big.
Left baseline jumper, I think, is Reggie's favorite shot.
Right, if he gets enough space within, like, 15 feet of the hoop, the ball's going in. I mean, it's just that simple.
Right. Yeah, the Lakers had no answer for him. I mean, of course, they hit 33 points. But the Lakers just really struggled keeping him off of that left side of the court. They didn't have Kobe to just get up in his face. And when they know he can shoot like he can, they're getting the creation from Jalen Rose that they like. It was so easy for him. I've never really thought, like, okay, yes, I've thought of Reggie as, like, an off-the-dribble scorer, obviously, but just, like, seeing it in its peak form, dominating in the finals was something special.
Yeah, I mean, this might be his greatest Pacer moment. I mean, this is the biggest stage he's been on. This was, like, and this was just, I don't know, him at his best in the best, biggest stage, I guess. And, like, the sad part is this is the only time really I've got to do it, right? I mean, by the time they were good again, 03-04, they were big stages. He just wasn't the same.
One other shot, yeah.
And he just got cut off so short every other, you know, year before, right? I mean, like, I would say
another big one. Michael, yeah.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, if he was 5 years younger, he probably would have he'd be Paul Pierce, maybe. I mean, think about it.
You know what we should do after we're done with the finals? We should Zapruder film the push-off. I think that would be fun.
Okay.
We haven't done a Zapruder in a while since Vic is back.
I mean, I thought we should have Zapruder. I guess I don't know if we could see the Kobe injury, but did Jalen Rose stick his foot under him?
Oh, he totally did. My gosh, the replay. Oh, yeah, he did. I thought it was so obvious.
It was obvious. I'm just trying.
Yeah, Kobe, miraculous healing, by the way. They were like, the day before this game, the Lakers were like, yeah, he couldn't put any weight on it. He had a boot in practice. And today he's like running around ready to play. And they're like, no, you can't. It's like, what?
That's because he's like Michael Jordan, where he kind of likes to, what's the right word? Exaggerate his injuries, I guess, or
magic stuff.
Yeah, but like, that was Michael's biggest thing, right? Jordan's thing was like, he could, like, people thought he was like so injured or so sick when he probably was not really that bad, but they like it added to his myth and his aura.
the mystic Michael.
Like, I wonder, seriously, I bet he had the stomach flu, but what if he like wasn't that bad?
No,
like, what if he was just like, he threw up a couple times and then he was just, and he was fine. Like, I've had the stomach flu that happens where you just kind of like all of a sudden.
It was the hangover game, and I will not hear otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah, hangover is totally different than
a totally different. And I feel like, honestly, it's probably harder to play with a hangover than the flu.
No, but if you had access to IV fluids, you'd be fine.
That's the thing.
Is you get IV, like, you don't understand. IV fluids are like, that's like giving your body like 3,000 Advil at once.
Yeah, I don't know anything about IVs, so that sounds horrible.
Not that horrible. It's like, that means your body like is like just feeling like nothing can hurt it.
Yeah. Man, right? The Lakers cut it to 5 here, mid-third. I've got clips running. Reggie comes around for a screen, off a screen, left wing. Mark Jackson hits him perfectly in the pocket, and the Lakers sent 3 guys to try to stop him behind the three-point line. He just takes one dribble in and banks it in. Like, that was the kind of massive shots he was hitting all game.
Yeah. I mean, he was
– and he only didn't play 2 minutes, and they got outscored in those 2 minutes. They needed him out there the entire time.
No, I mean, that's the greatest thing is him and Jalen played 45 minutes apiece.
45 minutes. Yeah, Jalen, once again, very good. Go back and listen to last Tuesday's podcast with Jonathan Washburn if you haven't yet to hear more about his Jalen Rose love and takes it. Jalen was the best player on this team in this series. And I think this was the first game where Jalen wasn't the best player on the team.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
So he was still very good. 21 points, hit half his shots. If he didn't clunk all his threes, he would have had quite an efficient game. He was really good.
Yeah, it's sad that he never was able to replicate kind of the peak he had this season.
I know. It's a shame.
I mean,
but, yeah, I like what hearing what Washi described him as and what he liked about his skill set. Very next possession after that Reggie shot I just talked about, Rose hits from the right baseline. It's like he was a lot better of a creator than Reggie was, both for himself and for other guys. It's not like he was, like, a good setup man with assists or anything like that, but he could do it. He's pretty good at manipulating a defense, so. He just had a lot of draw on the court.
Well, he also he saw the floor better than Reggie did, and certain, like he said, during the passing. And You remember he played the Fab Five, and wasn't he the point guard on the Fab Five?
Basically? Yeah, he wanted to be. We talked about this last Tuesday. You didn't hear it, but I'll tell you. What he didn't like pre Bird was he wanted to play point guard, and Bird got him to be like, no, play the wing, because he wanted to play the one here in Indiana. So.
Well, Larry Brown wanted him to play for shit.
No, he did not like that. Larry Brown.
Larry Brown despised him.
Yeah. Good on Bird for figuring that one out. And we'll see another fun Jalen Rose game in game four.
To be honest, I think Larry Bird's a pretty good coach. I just think at some point he lost his edge on as a GM.
But yeah.
I think he's a pretty good evaluator of talent and like knows how what a guy needs to do to maximize that talent. Now, whether they follow through with it is a question, but I think he sees what players are like. He sees how good a player can be and stuff like right. that.
I'm excited for next week when Jalen is bad for the first time in the series. Rick is amazing and gets to shut us up for our criticisms this week. And the bench is really good.
Yeah.
Next week's game, I think, is the most fun one we're going to do. Kobe was nuts. Shaq was nuts. Game.
If they win that game, they might actually win the series. It's the saddest.
Yeah, they at least get to seven.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Who knows if they would have won game five or not, but I mean, that's...
They smoked the Lakers. I mean, the Lakers are up 3-1, so who knows
how much... Yeah, but I mean, it's just kind of...
But they smoked them.
Each game is independent of each other.
Right.
In the series. You win game four, they win game five, but man, they were... They had a shot.
Game five was Jonathan Bender's only playoff experience. Or finals experience, excuse me.
Well, they also could have won game six easily, too. They were up going in that one, too.
Yeah.
In the fourth quarter.
You got anything else from this game? It was fun to see the Pacers win a finals game.
So I watched one of them that didn't have any ads, so I wasn't able to see what the sponsorship
was. Oh, dang. I forgot
we were doing. I watched that. The same one you watched.
Mine didn't have ads either.
Which is disappointing because I wanted to see what crazy crap movie was going to be the advertising for this week.
Yeah, and it would have been indie ads, too, which would have been funny.
Yes.
Dang, this
who knows? It might have been an LA broadcast still.
Who's can you think of any NBA players who are like exactly 40 years old?
What do you mean, like today?
Yeah, just random question. I know.
Why are you asking this question?
Well, I clicked on Jonathan Bender's page and he's still 39.
Okay, hold on. So 40 years old means you have to be
born. He's 4 years younger than Tim Duncan. Like that's
so crazy. 1980. If you're born 80 means you have to probably gone pro between 99 and 2000.
Yes, he was. NBA debut was December 10th, 1999.
So D Wade has got to be close to that age, but he's not playing anymore.
No, Wade's younger than 40, right?
Probably 38, 37.
Yeah, Wade's 38. So Jonathan Bender is 1 year older than Dwayne Wade.
So Carmelo's still playing, and he's probably 36.
Yes. Yes.
Vince Carter
is freaking Carter's that is older insane. Than him. That
Vince is, Carter is still playing older than him, obviously.
Vince is older. Wow. This is a random age fact. T Pain's birthday was yesterday, and T Pain being younger than Childish Gambino and J. Cole just blows my mind every time. But that's not basketball. Who cares? We should talk about the show this month, Adam.
Yeah. Do you want to use it now, or do you want to just, or I guess tell how many shows we're doing per week because we're cutting?
Yeah, down. Well, this week we're going to do four because of some already scheduled things. But yes, without sports, are cutting down from our 5 days a week schedule. We finished out March, which was fun, but we're probably gonna put the player season recaps on a hiatus for a while and do three a week for a while until we know something's coming back. But we know for the rest of the month we can finish out this final series, looking back on those games. Hopefully, you listened to my interview with Tim Sinclair last week. I want to do more of those media interviews. I already know who it's going to be this week, but you guys will see on Wednesday. And Adam has an idea for his show that he's going to do every week too for our third show. Adam, take it away.
Yeah, so I'm going to do like a kind of what if thing. So I've already thought up some of those. This won't be just like the easy ones, like draft. Like I'm really probably going to try to avoid the what they in Kawhi Leonard and then trade because that's kind of the easy one. But I think like talking about specific plays, moments.
What if they call goaltend?
Yeah, I mean, I think even more farther back than that. So I'm going to probably go back as far as I can go, like where I get video at least. So like I probably will go back to the ABA stuff. But like, you know, I think there's a good one of like, what if the Pacers win the 85 draft with Ewing, I think, instead of
right.
the Knicks. That's a decent one. That's also the part. But like the first one I'm thinking about doing right now, and I'll by Friday I'll have set up kind of a format for this because I'm kind of working on it throughout the day a little bit today, as I thought of this idea at brilliantly at like 2 o'clock this afternoon. the first thing is, what if Reddy doesn't get blocked in game two of the Eastern Conference Finals in 2004. That's the first one I think I'm going to do, because that's, I think that is one of the biggest what if moments in Pacers history, because I think it's pretty obvious the Pacers and Pistons were the best two teams that year, and so whatever team came out of that series is going to probably win the whole thing, because they were just so good on defense that it wasn't, you know, they were going to stop the Lakers, who were imploding in themselves in hindsight. So that's what I'm thinking about doing for our first one. So I'll have a bunch of those. If you've got any good ones that you can think of, throw them my way. I'll probably buy, by the time I post the podcast on Friday, have a list of at least the first kind of three or four I'm going to do and some ideas I have. But that's kind of, that's what we want to do going forward. I think that's maybe kind of more entertaining right now than just doing player reviews for a season that may be over, may not be over.
Yeah, player reviews. We're talking about 2K games. Like, we're clearly grasping at straws for
stuff. No, and I think the what-if moment, and I think talking to media members is kind of a good insight to what's going on.
Yeah, media members all have their own special takes on what's going on in the season. They can talk about their own quarantine story, stuff like that. And maybe we'll have some players on. We'll do our best.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what you can expect in April and most likely May, but we'll see. So you got anything else, Adam?
Nope, that's all I got. Everybody just stay safe out there.
Yes, please follow your state's guidelines. But even beyond that, please try to social distance, self-isolate.
Stay home as much as possible.
Stay home as much as possible. Thank you guys for listening. We'll do game 4 next week, most exciting game of the finals. It's going to be super fun. So stick around for that. And we will see you tomorrow, actually.